We welcome Reverend Doug Traversa as our speaker today. Doug is a minister of the Unitarian Universalist Church of Tullahoma. He completed his seminary studies at Meadville Lombard Theological School in Chicago. Doug is a retired Air Force officer, a gamer, and a dog lover. Doug will speak on the topic, Staying Sane in a Crazy World. Let's welcome our speaker, Doug Traversa.
I have a joy to share also. It was exactly 9 years ago to this week that I set foot inside a Unitarian Universalist church, and that's the one in Tullahoma. So a lot can happen in 9 years, and you got to be careful when you come into a church where things are so innovative and free and encourage free thought and a free and responsible search for truth and meaning that I just fell in love with it almost immediately, and here I am. Today, amongst other things, we are going to be talking about one of our principles, and it's not one you hear emphasized a lot. We talk a great deal about the inherent worth and dignity of every person, the interdependent web of all existence, the free and responsible search for truth and meaning. But I'm going to be looking a little bit today at number 5, the right of conscience and the use of the democratic process within our congregations and in society at large. When I first started writing this sermon, and you have, at least where we are, they ask for the sermon titles by month so they can go into the newsletter for the church. So I try to come up with 2 titles and have a vague idea what I'm going to be talking about well in advance. And we have at least one guest speaker who shows up on fairly regularly, and he pretty much just comes up with a title and then speaks about whatever he wants to anyway, because isn't quite ready to do that. So I went with Staying Sane in a Crazy World. And I wanted to talk about ways of, you know, relieving tension or making good decisions when everything seems upside down and backwards. And this was a couple weeks ago before the political system in our country, which had already been pretty crazy, just went even crazier. I'm not going to be talking about particular candidates today. First of all, it's illegal to advocate for a candidate from the pulpit. But secondly, I'm really not interested in having an argument about who the best candidate is and who you should vote for. That's not my purpose up here, and it's not my place to tell you that. What I want to do is talk about how you deal with the stress that's coming when, A, you're trying to make a good decision if you're going to vote, you know, who do I pick? B, what do I do when I'm bombarded by increasingly negative news coverage of things that are happening that are increasingly negative, frankly? How do we deal with that without, you know, just becoming profoundly depressed and wanting to just give up hope? So that's where I'm going today. And both during my talk and afterwards during the talk back, I would encourage everyone to remember, we're not debating candidates. We're debating how to approach the political system if you're going to be involved at all, because, you know, maybe you're not, and that's your right also. But this is a very strange and unique time in American politics. All that being said, and I'm a political junkie. Guilty as charged. When I was in junior high school, when normal kids were playing, I played sports, but normal kids were interested in sports, and the guys are checking out girls, and the girls are checking out guys, I was interested in politics. Believe it or not, and this is absolutely true, during the Republican convention way back when Reagan was challenging Ford, and it was a really tight race, if you're too young to remember that, it was still somewhat up in the air. It wasn't completely locked in like they tend to be nowadays. And our newspaper published a big tracking sheet of all the states and what they were guessing they were going to vote for. And then you could sit there during the convention and watch it on TV and track the votes as they came by. And I did that in junior high school. So, yeah, I'm a political geek or junkie or whatever you want to say. I find it interesting, fascinating, how, you know, it's sort of like watching sports. You're watching a competition that just never ends, at least in our country. We've been doing this for a year already, and the election is nowhere near enough to get it all over with. But I follow this stuff, and so when something like what's going on right now happens, I can speak from experience that I've never seen anything like what's happening right now in politics. And in the, I mean, people always call each other names and attack each other when they're running for office, but never to the degree that we're seeing it right now. And you have to admit, whoever you support, or if you're undecided, this is really pretty much historical, at least within our lifetimes, because I'm going to quote from the Gallup poll website. Trump and Clinton are currently among the worst-rated presidential candidates of the last 7 decades, according to Gallup. And, you know, Gallup wasn't around during the Revolutionary War, so we can't go all the way back. And some of those campaigns were pretty brutal, too. I understand that. But within the last 70 years, we have a new record, ladies and gentlemen. Trump is 42% highly unfavorable. This isn't just unfavorable or I dislike. This is highly unfavorable. And Clinton's at 33%. Now, keeping those two numbers, 42 and 33%, prior to this election cycle, the lowest score ever achieved by any presidential candidate goes all the way back to 1964 with Barry Goldwater, and that was 26% unfavorable. So Clinton beats Barry Goldwater, the guy who was going to destroy the world with nuclear warfare, if you remember the commercial. He only managed 26% unfavorable. Clinton's at 33, Trump's at 42. So this is history in the making, and all you youngsters, pay attention, because one day you're going to be my age, and you're going, I remember back when Clinton and Trump ran, and you couldn't believe. Now, if you have decided that despite those numbers, you are pro-Trump or Clinton, then what I'm going to be talking about isn't going to have a lot of impact on you. But bear with me because we're going to leave politics towards the end of this anyway. But if you are one of the many Americans, i.e. the 33 or 42% or highly unfavorable looking at these two candidates, and you're trying to figure out what am I going to do when November rolls around? Am I just going to stay home or what decision do I make? Because this is important. It does affect our country. It may affect the world. What decision am I going to make? How do I deal with this when I just can't make up my mind? And if you feel that way, you are in good company. You see all the time on the news now, Republicans who will get up and say, well, I'm not going to vote for Trump and I'm not going to vote for Clinton. And they ask them, what are you going to do then? And they just sort of go, like, you haven't thought about this. You're on the news. You're telling people you're not going to vote for either of these two. And you haven't figured out what you are going to do. So apparently either they're still wrestling with it or they're being coy. I don't know. But you're in good company if you haven't figured out how to go in November yet. Now here's a little personal insight. And this is where you get beyond the names, beyond the parties, and start dealing with how do I make a tough decision in a situation like this? Now, I'm the sort of person who loves to push back when someone tells me, you have to do something. And if somebody tells me, you only have two choices, you have to go Republican or Democrat, or you're just being stupid and you're wasting your vote, I'm the sort who will immediately say, well, therefore, since you're being such a jerk, I'm going to vote third party just to show you. And I've done this many times. And, you know, I admit that, and it doesn't bother me in the least. But one of the things I do when I look at a candidate, regardless of party, because I don't always vote third party, I look at the character of the person as best as I can tell what their character is. That's not always easy, of course. There's a lot of false fronts being put up as people try to present the best side of themselves. But I look at a person and I look at their life, their service, what have they done? Who do I think has the best character, not necessarily the best stance on issues, because those can change. But if I think I can trust this person, I'm going to be far more inclined to vote for them. You know, there was a time when I had a Bernie Sanders bumper sticker on my car. That's gone. He's not running. And it wasn't because he's a socialist or a democratic socialist or whatever you want to call it that I liked him. I liked him because I liked him. I felt that there was a man who was being straightforward and honest, and you had a long track record of this. And someone said to me, how could you even want to support this guy? Do you want this to be a socialist nation? And what I said was, the nation isn't going to become a socialist nation. A president doesn't have that kind of power. You have Congress, you have the Senate, and the president doesn't rule by decree. If you want to change laws, you have to get other people behind you. And I said, I feel very comfortable with him being the commander-in-chief, making decisions about going to war or not, having the nuclear codes, knowing that this is a man who has a good heart, as far as I could tell, I could be wrong, but I get that impression that this is a man who really cares about the nation as a whole and isn't in it just for himself. So I liked the man, and thus I did not agree with all of his issues that he stood for, but I liked him a lot, and I would have voted for him if he was still running. But that's how I looked at it. No one's going to line up 100% with all my stands on all the issues. And I can cut somebody a lot of slack on issues that I may not agree with them on if I like the person and think, this is the person who's going to decide if we're sending men and women into combat again. This is the person who's going to decide if we use nuclear weapons. This is a person who's going to be straightforward. So that's what I'm looking for in November. And I don't know who I'm going to vote for in November, but I don't feel my options are limited to just two people, despite all the pressure from lots of sources that say, if you don't vote Trump or Clinton, you're wasting your vote. Now, if you are one of the discontented people that I've talked about, you have a few options in November. One, you can just stay home and don't vote. Two, you could do a write-in candidate. And some people love to write in goofy things like Mickey Mouse or Donald Duck or something as a protest to say, I'm just fed up with the options. So you're allowed to do that if you want to. You could, if you believe you're really choosing between the lesser of two evils, you can go and vote for the lesser of two evils because the other option's even worse. Or finally, you could vote third party. And I have a few thoughts on these options. Now, many people love to point out the example of Ralph Nader running in 2000 in the state of Florida, which just barely went to Bush. And if you hate George W. Bush, bottom line is he won Florida. All the recounts that I've seen, even the tightest ones, still showed him winning. And you may disagree with the process and the Supreme Court involvement and all that, but the odds are really, really high. He just out and out won Florida. And we can complain about it, but I think he did, even if Roger's shaking his head. I'm not saying I wanted him to. I'm just saying I think he won. But I was a Florida resident at the time, and I voted for Ralph Nader, and I still sleep soundly at night. And people say, oh, you're such a jerk. You helped George Bush win. No, I didn't help George Bush win. You know, if Al Gore could have won his home state, this state, things would have been, he couldn't even win Tennessee. He was from Tennessee and he couldn't win. So if Al Gore didn't get my vote, that's my right. I can vote for who I want to. Don't blame me for what happened thereafter. And I still feel that way. And if you're one of the people who votes third party or whatever, don't let people tell you you screwed up. I'm not saying you need to. I'm not saying you should. I'm saying just vote your conscience, whatever it may be. Hate to use the words that Ted Cruz used at one point, but I actually agree with him on this one. Secondly, people like to say you're wasting your vote, but here's something a lot of people don't understand. If you do vote third party, if any third party candidate gets 5% of the national vote, they get public campaign funding. Now, this is a huge issue for the small parties because right now, 5% would get you roughly $10 million in the next election cycle. And I'll tell you right now, Green Party, Libertarian Party, Constitution Party, whatever little parties are out there, they don't have anywhere near $10 million. $10 million would be huge, and it would allow them to have a voice in our political process. So instead of just assuming it's an either or, either they get elected president or I'm wasting my vote, there are other issues involved, including the growth of other parties and other options for us down the future, other options for our children and our grandchildren. Now, if you love the two-party system and you think it's produced outstanding candidates throughout history, vote, you know, and you think that's the way it should stay, stay away from third party, absolutely. You know, whatever you believe. And finally, if any third-party candidate gets 15% in five national polling surveys, they get to be on the stage during the three national presidential debates and the vice presidential debate. I think there's three. And I think it'd be really cool, although still great long shot, for some other parties to be up there and have other people involved in the debate besides just Trump and Clinton. I would love to hear detailed debates from Green Party and Libertarian Party and Constitution Party and have them be up there also. Will they get to 15%? That's a long shot. But it would be great to see it. I would like to have other options presented. Now, it is a crazy political season, as I stressed, and nothing would surprise me anymore. So it wouldn't surprise me if one of them got up there. Because anything could happen. If Trump and Clinton got into a fistfight at the first debate, that might surprise me. But then again, maybe not. I really don't know what's coming anymore. We've been informed that President Obama founded ISIS. You may or may not have heard a threat against Clinton's life. And that was just in 1 week. So I don't know what's coming. I think it's going to get crazier. But the title of my sermon was, How Do You Stay Sane When the World Seems to Be Going Crazy? My first piece of advice, since we're talking politics, is to take your vote seriously. Do research and vote for the person you most want to be in office. Who do you most trust to make decisions about wartime? Because that's one of the things a president has almost unilateral control over at this point. Congress has abdicated its responsibility to declare war, and the president can send troops into combat pretty much at a whim. So who do you want making those decisions? And don't think that if you vote for someone other than one of the two major parties, that you're wasting your vote. That is not a wasted vote. But I do want to tell you what a wasted vote is. In 2014, in the state of Tennessee, Bill Haslam ran for governor, and the Democratic nominee was a man named Charlie Brown. Charlie Brown didn't have so much as a website or campaign funding of any sort or even a list of issues. His sole issue was he wanted to get the Bible back into schools. This was a guy who put his name up there as a joke. He's listed first alphabetically on the ballot, and he's named after, or has the same name as, a famous cartoon comic strip character. And the brilliant people of Tennessee chose him over any other candidate, the Democrats at least, who voted in the primary. Now, you want to talk about a wasted vote. If you walk in to vote and you don't know who's on the ballot, and you haven't done even a modicum of research to see where these people stand on issues, you are wasting your vote and you are hurting legitimate candidates. There were four Democratic candidates. Only one of the four was a serious candidate. Only one of the four bothered to have a website to list issues, had some governing experience, and could have at least been a reasonable opponent for Bill Haslam. But we got Charlie Brown, whose Facebook page misspelled his own name. And the campaign photograph of it was him with three catfish. And people voted for him. And in the election, Bill Haslam got 950,000 votes. Charlie Brown, the man with no stand on any issue except get the Bible back in the schools, got 309,000 votes. 309,000 people thought this guy should be the governor of Tennessee. That's wasted votes. What did I do? I researched everyone who was running for governor, and I found one of the smaller party candidates who stood no chance and said, at least this person's bothered to put some effort into it. They've got a website. They've got issues. They're trying. And I voted for them. And I know a person who did this exact thing. It's a friend of mine, and I was complaining that people went in and voted for Charlie Brown. How stupid is that? And she said, I did that. So she learned how I felt pretty quick. If you're going to go in and vote, please, please, please make some effort to at least learn who the candidates are, what they stand, where they stand on the issues. Otherwise, you truly are wasting your votes. And you can't just assume that if you like the Democratic Party or the Republican Party, that everyone with that little R or D next to their name is actually a legitimate, serious candidate. In Tennessee, we've seen that this is not the case. Prior to Charlie Brown, there was another guy named Clayton who was actually more conservative than the Republican candidates. I don't know how he won, except his last name began with C, and he was the first of the Democratic candidates. And if all you can do is go in and vote for the first person in a list of names, please stay home. Please stay home, because you are not taking the wonderful privilege we have of voting and choosing or participating in a democracy. You're not taking it seriously if that's how you approach it. And by the way, you don't have to vote on everything on a ballot. You know, there are sometimes you go in and you can't find information on people. And then I'll just leave it blank. If I don't know if this judge should be retained or not, and I couldn't find any information, I'll just leave it blank, because not voting is worse than voting for or against someone and making a bad vote. You can get copies of the ballots from the newspaper websites usually, or the election websites. It's not hard to get a complete ballot, and you can see what's coming and do your research. Please do that. Please do that if you're going to vote. Now, moving on from politics to a broader perspective, when the world seems inverted, upside down, or inside out, when you feel like you're living in a Twilight Zone episode, how do you stay sane? How do you stay grounded? How do you make good decisions? Now, this is the fertile ground of many sermons and discussions. There's a lot of ideas on how to make good decisions and how to stay grounded. But I think one of the answers lies in the very simple statement, you must try to do your best, whatever it is. Give it your best shot. Don't mail it in, whether it's who you're going to vote for or any other aspect of your life. Try really hard to make the wisest choice. Do a little research, give it a little effort, and try to do your best. That sounds very basic, but it's also very profound, because so often we don't. When I was thinking about this, it occurred to me that one of the most insidious things about the range of fundamentalist religions that are out there is their eagerness to see you punished for your mistakes. You know, you've made the wrong choice about the wrong God or the wrong religion, and now you're going to suffer eternal consequences for it, even if you were working sincerely, trying to find truth and meaning and trying to make a wise decision as you search the multitude of religions that are out there and philosophies. And you make a good faith effort to derive truth and meaning as you're doing your research. There are a number of religions out there that suggest if you make a mistake, you're going to pay dearly for it. And yet, that's what drew me here to Unitarian Universalism 9 years ago, was that knowledge that you had the right and privilege and responsibility to seek truth and meaning, and yet people aren't sitting there with their clipboards ready to tell you, oh, you've gone the wrong way, one step too far, now you're doomed. No, it was a religion, a church that allowed you to make mistakes, that encouraged you as you struggled with the hard questions to take risks, to be able to say, well, I may have got that wrong, but now I'm not going to be condemned by the whole congregation because I stepped over a line of belief or doctrine. No, Unitarian Universalism gives you a safe place to come as you wrestle with life. Life is tough. The questions aren't easy. If you're trying to give your best, you will still make mistakes. But Unitarian Universalism, at least for me, has given me a wonderful, loving place to be as I struggle with all these hard questions. And my congregation has gotten to watch me evolve over 7.5 years of ministry now that I've been doing this. And I'm far different from what I was 7.5 years ago. They've allowed me to grow and change. Unitarian Universalism allows you to grow and change and try different paths, different philosophies, different religions, different practices. It encourages that. So in closing, I would say if the world is going crazy, if we are living in a Twilight Zone episode, it is wonderful to be in congregations like ours that understand the complexities of this world and appreciates our human efforts to make sense of it all and to live rightly. And for that, I am eternally grateful for what this congregation, my home congregation, and all the little congregations around Tennessee are doing to provide hope for people in the madness that is 2016. Thanks for coming, and vote wisely.